Canuck Central Friday, a mailbag Friday. We'll get to your questions in hour two of the program. Hour one, you'll hear from Yannick Hansen as you do every Friday, as Canuck Central is a presentation of your local Grip Auto and tire location. Friendly service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. Stan Riccio and Satyar Shah on a beautiful Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
Around Vancouver.
Gorgeous. And what a great environment to showcase a city for to a free agent.
So do you think that's really a thing? Like if Andre Kuzmenko shows up to Vancouver.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Raincouver.
Yeah.
January type weather.
Yeah.
That it would be a tough sell on him.
So, yes. No, I mean...
the other cities are Edmonton, so it still wouldn't matter.
Yeah, no, I
right?
mean, in all honesty, it probably wouldn't be a detriment, but this city, when it's sunny, it can make you fall in love.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first sunny day you saw in Vancouver?
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was special. It's like, oh, I'm not in Ontario anymore.
Yeah, like, wow. Now, it's pretty incredible. Any person I've met who's seen Vancouver for the first time on a sunny day, they're like, this is spectacular. So I don't know if that helps you all that much, but you're seeing the best of the city at least.
It can't hurt.
No, definitely not.
A little trip to the Blue Water Cafe didn't hurt anybody either.
No, he seemed pretty jolly.
Yeah.
Hanging out today too, taking photos.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So we'll see. We should get a decision sometime next week. And we're going to talk to Matt Lee a little bit later. Maybe you could even wager on it. As well as to where Andre Kuzmenko ends up.
And, you know, I saw Rob Simpson had the article too, and he spoke to Dan Milstein and talked about, you know, they're here and they're staying in Vancouver today. More meetings happening today, and or at least in the morning. And no real plan to leave anytime soon. As in, like, we don't have a flight booked for today or tomorrow type of deal. At least, and hey, I don't think that means Vancouver is going to be signing him necessarily the next day or two. But what I do believe is that a decision is not that far off. And yes, it might take another week to 10 days, but I think Kuzmenko personally, with his camp, for all intents and purposes, probably figure out or at least decide on what they're going to do within the next day or two.
So we'll keep an eye on that. And obviously, Canuck Central will have it. And we'll discuss whatever ends up happening with Andre Kuzmenko. Now, a lot happening with the Vancouver Canucks, Sat. As we know, since Jim Rutherford came in, it's essentially been a complete overhaul of the organization and its staff behind the scenes away from the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And we're expecting some overhaul on the ice to a certain extent this offseason. Today, we found out Ian McIntyre mentioning that Chris Brumwell, who had been running essentially the PR department for the Vancouver Canucks for a very long time, has been with the organization for a very long time, has been let go. And it's tough to lose a good person. Chris has always been easy to work with and helpful. But I think it highlights just how much change is really going on within the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, massive change. And you mentioned it. You don't come across many more professional and kind and thoughtful people in this industry and that work PR, especially at the NHL level, than guys like Chris Brumwell. And I'm excited to see what he does next and wish him nothing but the best in his family. I mean, a great person in and out, all around. But to your point, it is a continuation of what we're seeing here, a complete restructuring of the organization. And we've seen essentially every significant leadership position be changed. New president. We saw Michael Doyle come in, you know, not too long before all this stuff, too. So that's been a new change that's happened within the calendar year. You look at Rutherford, of course, Alvin, the entire front office. Then you start looking at now, you know, the heads of other departments are changing. And, you know, they are keeping a guy like Trent Call, for instance, in charge, and Ryan Johnson's there. But you've seen all those departments get boosted up and everything's changed. And the other part about this, too, is there's still a budget.
Mm-hmm.
And when all of a sudden you have a big front office and that's where your focus should go to, that means other departments aren't going to be as robust potentially. And there's only so much money that does go around. And there is as much as, you know, ownership has shown an inclination to spend more and bring in a big front office and change things up, there's also a lot of money that's not being spent efficiently in this organization. And by that, I mean, you're still paying Travis Green not to coach next season. You're still paying all the managers not to manage next season, the changes that you've made. And one thing that Rutherford himself talked about was, we want to get away from a position where we're paying people not to be part of our organization, because it takes a big chunk of your budget out. I mean, when you calculate all the Travis Green salary of $2.75 million and everybody else's salary you're paying next season, or at least some sort of, you know, deal you broke to get them out or whatever it is, you're talking about excess of $3 million being spent on people not working here.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff is going to impact your organization.
And, you know, it's unfortunate that it has to happen this way. But you're right. You know, you're spending on Travis Green, Jim Benning. You have dead money against the cap with some of the buyouts that you've had. Like, there's a lot of budget money that is going to things that aren't exactly helping your franchise right now. The way I see it, they've spent a ton of money in upgrading the front office. And clearly there is not an endless amount of money. It's not a blank check. And there's very few organizations can operate in that way. You know, we look at the Leafs essentially that seem to do that at times, but even they have pulled back the reins during the course of the pandemic. Now that we're coming out of the pandemic, it looks like we're heading into a serious recession. So, like, there's a lot of factors that go in here, and budgets have to be taken into account.
Yeah, and one of the things that is going to happen, especially under this new environment they're going to be in, and you hear from the business side as well, they always want to make money, yes, but the margins are going to be different. We want to spend more, but we also want to be lean in other ways. And that's kind of the new way, age way of doing things as well. It's not like you go and spend and hire this massive staff. It's like, yeah, you get in as many people as you can, but then you decide, okay, where do we take away from and how do we make sure that we get the most out of each department? So that's the behind the scenes stuff, which I know is not super exciting for most fans or really, but I do think it is also instructive to the overall culture change that's also happening. Because every single department now, significant department in this organization, that deal with hockey ops to some degree, because PR does work with hockey ops, just messaging and just those sort of things. But every single thing related to dealing with players and dealing with hockey ops outside of the scouting director has changed.
Jim Rutherford is putting his stamp on the organization.
Exactly. To some now, and I'm not saying, and from what we understand, this decision is not something that was made by the president,
right,
by hockey ops or anything, because this is a separate department in that sense. But it's this, when we heard that they were going to, you know, start with a clean slate and they're going to really clean house, this is essentially the continuation of that. Anybody who's been here for a long time in a big sense is no longer here, essentially.
Culture change means changing some of the people within your organization. And that's an unfortunate reality, but that is part of how you go about doing that. And the Canucks have been in that process.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing you kind of heard is, so now we've talked about off ice.
Yeah.
All the leadership things that are changing, that have changed within the past calendar year now, and or at least in the last say, 7 months, when you include Boudreaux coming in. So last 7 months, a lot of changes have kind of happened. Where's the only place where a leadership change hasn't happened? On the ice.
That's right.
And we keep hearing about leadership stuff and all those sort of things. I just wonder where that's going to lead, ultimately.
There is going to be change on the ice.
Because, I mean, if you want to think of it as, okay, if we're going through the process of changing all our leadership, are you changing the leadership significantly of
your team on the ice?
Yeah, and does the captain play into that at all or not? I mean, how far are you going to really change the overall culture? Is it just off ice in those positions?
Yeah.
Or is it ultimately going to be on ice too?
Horvat wears the C, but Miller was the emotional leader of this team.
Yeah.
The wear your heart on your sleeve type leader, game in and game out. Now, that's not to be a knock on Horvat. He's just more of a reserved personality than JT Miller is. I think we're totally, and our shows this week have reflected it, Sat. we are definitely headed down a path where one of Miller or Horvat is not with this organization next year.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of their contract situations, and that is just where this team is headed. The cap situation, you can't change that. So, well, you can, but you have to move out a significant piece in order to change your cap situation, change your lack of future assets as well, as we've talked about. So could it be one of Miller or Horvat as the change of leadership on the ice? I think that's a very realistic outcome of what happens over this next month.
Yeah, I think so too. And I don't have a good sense yet. I was on with Faber and Quads on their podcast. They didn't hit with them a bit earlier today. And
Canucks conversation.
Canucks on Canucks combo.
We're going to miss Faber here. He's a great
honestly
guy.
Great dude. Super proud of him though for the spot that he's getting. And those guys have worked their butts off, honestly.
100%.
And to do what they're done and the success they're having now and seeing them get full time roles, it's awesome to see. And they're two awesome guys. But one thing I told them when they kind of asked me about, well, what do you think is going to happen or what's your sense? It's like 50-50. Like, I'm not even trying to, you know, play down the middle or sit on the fence, but I don't think anybody has a real strong sense of exactly what this front office is going to do. And if you say you know what they're going to do, I don't know. I don't know if I buy it because I don't know. I get enough. And I sometimes think I get something and then I look into it more. I'm like, I'm not sure I believe that necessarily. I don't think a determination has yet been 100% made, but I think that between Horvat and Miller, something is going to happen. I'm not sure which one.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to know unless you know the numbers they're talking about behind the scenes. If Miller's at 8.5, is Horvat asking for 7 and change?
I mean, and that's the
Horvat
question.
Horvat has every right to ask for 7 and change,
of
given
course,
where the market is.
Yeah, I mean, from a bargaining position, from a market rate perspective, of course he does. It's on the Canucks to gauge whether they think that's
worth it.
Exactly. Now, I do believe that Horvat's going to give you a discount. He will. I think he's going to give you a discount. Now, is that discount going to be $100K, $500K? You know, maybe 750, maybe $1 million a year, whatever. But where's the point of that discount coming from?
Yeah.
Because we had long assumed that, well, before he scored 31 goals or whatever at the end of the year, that if you want to sign Horvat, the template is in Ryan Nugent Hopkins contract to some degree. You can have the cap at around $5 million or so if you go 7 years, 8 years maybe. And, you know, you can work it out, give him a bit of a raise based on next year. But what if he now believes that he should be getting close to $8 million a year? So is he giving you a discount from the $8 million range or a discount from the $6 million range or $7 million range? And each one of those is significant. And those are two tiers. So did he jump to the $7 million tier, the $8 million tier that he's asking, or is he still in that $6 million tier that he wants?
The 31 goals really changed Horvat's trajectory. And we all like Bo Horvat, but it comes down to the number. It's one of the reasons I hate the salary cap, because I can't look at Bo Horvat in a vacuum and just say, yeah, it's a good hockey player. I'd like to have him on my team. I can't do that.
No.
It has to be with the context of what that next number is.
Precisely. Now, and again, if Bo is willing to play ball in a big way, then it becomes easy for your organization.
Yeah.
Even if they say, let's say Bo's like, you know what, like, hey, I want to be here and I want to do what the last great Canucks team did. They all took a bit less for us to have success. And I want to really make that my statement here as a captain of the team. If that
part of
happens,
his legacy.
Yeah, if that's something he wants to do, and honestly, I don't see it happening just from a, you know, pragmatic point of view, from a player's perspective. Like, you know, is he going to take $5 million when he can make significantly more? But let's just say, for argument's sake, he says, yeah, I'll sign the same contract I had this past year. Give me a little bit more per year. Give me one extra year.
Mm-hmm.
Then from the team's perspective, it's like, well, we're signing this guy for 7 years at 5.6.
Yeah.
That just makes too much sense, for instance.
Well, one of the things about the Nuge contract that worked in the Oilers' favor is he was having a bit of a down year when he came up for negotiation. And that in turn ended up helping the Oilers, who end up getting Ryan Nugent Hopkins at a lower average annual value than he was on his second contract. and by a pretty significant margin. He went from $6 million to $5,125.
Yeah, he's actually on the AAV, he took a bit less.
Yeah.
But the total contractual value was what, $41
million? 8 years.
8 years. 40 some million.
Yeah.
Horvat's last contract was worth what, $30
million? Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to give, like, you know, total money wise, I bet Horvat probably wants in the $40 to $50 million range at least.
Yeah.
At least.
So this is funny because Nuge, it's already totaled. After these two contracts, he will have totaled $77 million in total money. A little bit more than that.
Not bad.
Not bad at all for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who, you know, has had a really strong career. But I don't know. I don't see a scenario where you get Bo Horvat, if you're signing him this summer at 5125, even 5-5, which is where he's at right
now. Yeah, it would be a massive, massive discount. And that's why, if you're looking at realistically, what's the best number Horvat gives you? It's probably 7 times 6.
Yeah.
Which is $42 million.
Yeah.
And that's probably the best case scenario for a low number, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
If the Canucks get him signed or anything less than that, that would be massive. But if I had to guess what he signs for, I mean, if you're Bo, you're probably looking at it and saying, yeah, I'll take 6 or 7 years or 8 or whatever or 7, but I want 6.5.
Yeah. The only way you're going to get the AAV that low is if you go higher on the term. And then it's up to you to be how comfortable you are with that. This Horvat Miller talk reminds me of Luongo Schneider. What are the chances by the deadline Canucks end up without both Miller and Horvat?
I don't see it. I don't see that happening. They're just not going to. I mean, now the circumstances that led to the Luongo Schneider thing was a lot different as well.
Yeah.
Okay, there are chances. I mean, it's a non-zero percent chance, but what would we put the odds of that happening? 100 to 1?
Yeah, it's very slim. Probably not 100 to 1. 50 to 1.
Really?
Yeah.
50 to 1?
That both Miller and Horvat are gone?
I think that's too good. I think that's too low. I think that means it's too likely. I just don't see it. I mean, there's no way they're going to both walk for nothing.
Yeah. Well, they're not going to walk for nothing, but... You know, Luongo and Schneider both didn't walk for nothing.
Yeah.
All right.
Or maybe the question is asking, do they trade both at the deadline? That's more interesting. I mean, the chaos scenario would be you go into the season, don't change the guys, horrible year, and then fire sale at the deadline.
That would be interesting, but also not fun. For a lot of people. Let's bring in our next guest. It's Matt Lee of BCLC. Joins us every Friday here on Canuck Central. Thanks for this, Matt. You know, we're still trading away Bo Horvat and JT Miller every couple of days here on the show. But I know over at BCLC and PlayNow.com, we've got a new prop up on the board, and that's where Andre Kuzmenko may end up as the potential free agent, well, the free agent coming out of Russia, is touring Vancouver over the last couple of days.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys mentioned it. The Andrei Kuzmenko Worldwide Tour is in full swing today, and it stopped at Vancouver. I'm surprised you guys haven't done a play-by-play breakdown of all the restaurants in Vancouver he's stopping at today as well. I'm not sure if you have. But
I'm not like other media. I don't just sit here and look at his Instagram all day.
Wow.
Anyway, it's a fun one we put up this weekend, and it's for this weekend only. Where will Andre Kuzmenko sign when it's all said and done? I believe that we're thinking that this decision next week. We've got the Edmonton Oilers leading the pack as the odds leaders at 2.5. The Canucks right behind at 3.0. The Ducks and Golden Knights at 4. I mean, for you guys, is it on the nose? Is it way off? Seth's got more sources than I do, so I'm not even sure if I've got the four teams correct here, but your guys' thoughts, too, is I welcome them.
No, honestly, I think that's pretty spot on, because as much as he's in Vancouver right now and all that stuff's happening, the Edmonton Oilers have kind of been the clubhouse leaders for quite a while, and the fact that Vancouver's not that far off, I think, is pretty close. I mean, I could see Vancouver signing, but if gun to my head, do I make a call right now? It is probably Edmonton. So I think the teams you have and the odds, they do make total sense for the situation. So I do like the value on Vancouver potentially.
Yeah, I agree. And getting back to Edmonton as well, I mean, the low-hanging fruit is that Andre Kuzmenko signs a short deal here. He really cashes in after a great season with Connor McDavid, a little bit like what we saw with Evander Kane for the second half of the year with the Edmonton Oilers. So that was the justification from our guys about why we were putting the Oilers as the clubhouse leader, as you guys mentioned. But the Golden Knights and then the Ducks, I think they're definitely sleepers in the mix as well.
Mm-hmm. Golden Knights would be super interesting. You know, they just traded away Evgeny Dodonov, yep. So maybe there's a spot in the lineup there for Kuzmenko and the Ducks. I mean, they just don't have a ton of wingers right now, and mm-hmm. they do have the top two centers. McTavish still coming, and obviously Zegras had the breakout year. Matt Lee joining us here on Canuck Central. So game two going on Saturday, Tampa Bay and Colorado. See, the line hasn't really moved a ton from where it was heading into game one, but how much do we like the Lightning to potentially bounce back here in game two?
Yeah, here comes what I've been calling the bolt bump all playoffs, really, guys. And the streak of winning games following a loss ended in the Eastern Conference Final. But PlayNow.com bettors are going right back to Tampa for Game 2, and few can sort of blame them. The Lightning do not know what it is like to fail on a consistent basis in the NHL playoffs, and 77% of bets right now on the money line on the Tampa Bay Lightning tomorrow. So I think that speaks to the belief I think that most bettors have in Tampa Bay. They haven't won two Stanley Cups in a row for any reason, for, you know, a fluky reason. I will say, interestingly, though, the 60-minute line getting a significant amount of action on the draw. And we know the Avs threw a ton of shots at Andre Vasilevsky in Game 1, but Tampa Bay weathered the storm. They even took the lead despite being heavily outshot. I think it certainly reflects on play now that bettors think this is going to be another competitive and close game.
Well, it really will be. And the great thing about Tampa, and especially at key times throughout this postseason, if you've bet them when they've been down, they've come through in a big way. And right now, to win the series, they're at 3.2. So, you know, this Tampa team that's won back-to-back cups, it's not very often you see a team like this. And yes, I mean, based on the odds, this is what you have to do. They're trailing in series. But mm-hmm. they're a team that, despite trailing, that's a team that's been really fun to bet on throughout the playoffs.
Absolutely, and Plano bettors have been betting on Tampa a lot throughout the playoffs right now, and you know, it's not a surprise whatsoever, because again, they've won back-to-back Stanley Cups already, and they have just been rewarding bettors throughout the entire spring this year. Even looking at the correct score for this series, guys, there's so much value right now on the Tampa Bay Lightning, whether it's to win in six games or even seven games right now. For six games, a 4-2 series, it's an 8.5 payout. And for Tampa to win in seven, it's 7.25. So there's a lot of juice right now. And if you were backing Tampa Bay earlier throughout the playoffs and you're still doing it now, this might be that one last chance to really get in on that correct score before things change following game two tomorrow.
How are we feeling about the Conn Smythe? Is it Cale Makar and Nikita Kucherov's to lose, depending on which team ends up winning?
Yeah, we've seen Cale Makar and Nathan MacKinnon's odds improve between the start of Game 1 and today. And, of course, the Avs certainly looked the part of a Stanley Cup champion in Game 1. And even though Makar was actually held off the score sheet completely in Game 1 and the Bolts limited MacKinnon to a single assist, they're still 1-2 in terms of Conn Smythe favorites. You guys have sort of mentioned Nikita Kucherov there. I'm going to throw in Andre Vasilevsky's name in there back again. His odds have actually dipped from 5 before the series started to 7 now. We all know that Andre Vasilevsky is that much better coming off of a loss. You know, he was 1-3 in series openers, guys, but he's also 2-1 in game twos as well this postseason. So thinking maybe we're seeing a little bit of a bounce back from Andre Vasilevsky, this series is still very much far from over in my mind.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I hope it goes long, because with the NBA Finals being over, Matt, like I don't need the playoffs to end this quickly. I still need more game action to watch and have fun with. And, you know, once this comes to an end, the Blue Jays are doing their thing. The BC Lions got off to that start. I mean, the Whitecaps are here. I mean, as far as play now is concerned, it is shaping up to be a pretty active summer, isn't it? Because the teams here, especially the Lions, look to be capturing the imagination of the market.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been kind of a unique year in the sense that typically the NHL is ending around this time, you know, of the year. And so that period between the end of June and the early July is kind of that quiet period, but we're really not going to have that much time to settle down between the sports here. And even after the NHL season is over, you're getting towards the off season where we've got draft markets, where we've got free agent markets. And then now you're starting to ramp up with the NFL as well, which we all know is going to have huge betting activity on PlayNow.com, whether it's the Super Bowl or the division outrights, MVP odds as well. Those start getting up there. So it's going to be kind of that crazy year where we're seeing so much betting activity from start to finish. That's for sure.
Matt, appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy game two tomorrow.
Absolutely. There is Matt Lee of BCLC. Bet on hockey like never before with Play Now Sports, your local BC sportsbook. Coming up, Yannick Hansen, his take on the Stanley Cup Finals to this point and what it's like playing under John Tortorella, who's back in the league as the Philadelphia Flyers head coach. That's next on Canuck Central. Canuck Central, a presentation of your local Grip Auto and Tire location. Friendly service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. Yannick Hansen going to join us in a couple of moments, as he does every Friday. Chris Gear, former AGM of the Vancouver Canucks, will be joining us after 5 o'clock. John Tortorella officially coaching Philadelphia Flyers, Sat. The circus in Philadelphia continues for another year.
It's fascinating. And I love it because it's so combustible.
Yeah. It does feel somewhat similar to the situation Tort stepped into in Vancouver. Declining team to a certain level and interesting spot to be dropped into, trying to keep the dream alive, and, you know, didn't work out.
No. Definitely not. Definitely not.
Torts certainly had a time here in Vancouver, and
It actually started off well. The Canucks were actually in a good spot up until he stormed Bob Hartley in the hallway, and after that is essentially when things really started falling apart.
Well, let's ask our next guest, who was on that team. He is Yannick Hansen. This insider is brought to you by the Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser River to serve you. Yannick, thanks for doing this as always. John Tortorella back in the league as the Philadelphia Flyers coach. Your memories of having Torts behind the bench?
You guys won the good, the bad, or the ugly.
All of it, please.
He is one of the most charismatic, engaging human beings I've ever come across. The way he can inspire a dressing room, the way he can talk, his speeches, the way he engages on the bench, one knee down, fist pumps when the team scores. A lot of things to like about that. Mm-hmm. He has a way with words. He's very good at it. And when you're on his in his eyesight and he's got you in his crosshairs, it is equally terrifying because they're coming fast and furious.
Yeah.
He's obviously been around for a long time. When he came to Vancouver, he brought the old school approach, if you will, blocking ton of shots, dig down in front of the net, kind of went a little bit away from what we were playing before. It'll provide a lot of stuff for the media, I'm sure. He's in a bigger market now, dropping in and out. He did some phenomenal things in Columbus, again, with the roster he had there. So there's no question that he definitely have the capability to go in and potentially turn a team around that Philly definitely needs. I don't know if he changed. At a certain point, the message that comes across from him, if you're able to dissect it, it's not an issue because there's a lot of words. But what he really wants you to do is he wants you to finish your checks. He wants you to make sure you block the shots. He wants you to play hard, be an honest player. Then you'll get more ice time than you can handle. But that message, it comes across with a lot of things you can't say on air. So if you kind of dive through that, and again, once he left, we got to know from coaches that were still around afterwards that, again, he does it to get the dressing room engaged, to wake him up, keep you on your toes. So it's not like he's coming in to be this terrible guy, which he at times seems like, because he's just looking at somebody to pick somebody apart and make them feel bad. But again, he's doing it in his own way to keep guys engaged, making sure they're on their toes, honest, all these things. So again, there's definitely things to like about Tortorella, and there's things you don't like. One of the things I did like and did not like was that on any given night, if you're playing well, you'll get more ice time than you can handle, and he'll throw you back out there, which is great when you're playing well, mm-hmm. and it's a consistent thing. When you're not, you're riding the pine pony, and you're sitting there for mm-hmm. yeah, you might play 4 or 5 minutes a night, which when you're on this groove all of a sudden, for me as a player preparing in between games, 2 days in between, how am I going to prepare for this game we got upcoming against Edmonton? Do I have to play 20, 24 minutes a night? Because then I'm not going in the gym. I'm not staying extra on the ice. I'm not doing all these things in order to keep me ready and playing. Where if I'm playing 4 minutes, well, I'm lifting in the weight, I'm on the bike, and I'm staying an extra half an hour with the skill coach because I got to keep myself ready. So you're always in this limbo, because the player I was, that I never really knew how my ice time would be, which made it very hard to prepare in the long run. And you guys mentioned that it went downhill after that game. I don't think that game per se had anything to do with it. I think Twins and Kess got tired out from playing 26, 27 minutes a night, and we just simply weren't deep enough for running that way. I think that the league had kind of caught up at that point. It wasn't a bottom six league anymore. It was four lines that needed to play, so you couldn't run your top guys like you'd done in Tampa with a lot of success. You had to spread out the minutes a little bit more. Early in the season, they were humming those guys and scoring in bunches. They had so much ice time, but I think the fatigue factor, and like I said, the rest of us, I didn't feel like I was in the perfect game shape that I probably should be. Again, I was injured again, so that might have taken a little bit off of it as well, but this in and out of the, not the lineup, but playing minutes and stuff like that. So, the top guys on our team, they really like that because they get force-fed these minutes that they love to get and get you in game and engaged. But for a lot of guys, I know the uncertainty, and if you're playing 4 to 6 minutes, it's impossible to play hockey that way. You're stone cold when you step on the ice, and the puck is a foreign object and all these things. So a little more consistency goes a long way.
Well, and when he's coaching, what type of team do you think is best suited for a guy like him? Like, and the Flyers are obviously not going to be trying to rebuild. They're trying to turn things around quickly. Like, is he the type of coach that would be good for a younger team? Or do you kind of need to be established and a veteran to really be able to figure it out under Torts?
I think he did well in Columbus with this team that's borderline playoff, could go in, and then he can push some buttons that'll get a lot out of certain players. I think he would do better with the veteran type teams that are looking for a playoff spot, teams that are on the cusp. Again, as far as development, I saw nothing of that from him. Like our practice was negligent. He didn't appreciate the practice. He didn't like practicing. Morning skates were pretty much canceled or optional all the time. You can't do that if you have a young group where you're trying to develop these guys, because they need to be on the ice. They need to be learning the game now. It's not like it was 10 years back when you come through the minors and you spend time and you develop. And once you step into the NHL, you're expected to know how to play hockey. Now they come straight out of college or junior, and you still have to shape these players into elite hockey players. Yeah, they're very talented and all these things, but some of these guys haven't played a minute of pro yet. So it takes a little bit more now from the coaching than it did in the past, where maybe you were more so managing your roster and putting the pieces together, where now you also have to develop these guys and teach them playing the right way, things that you had taught in the minors beforehand.
So I just looked it up. Kessler was almost 22 minutes a night the year Torts was coaching here in Vancouver. Highest of his career. And Hank and Danny, both over 20 minutes a night on average. They weren't over 20 any other season in their careers. I mean, just how much more, like, it doesn't seem like a lot, but it adds up, doesn't it, Yannick?
It's taxing. And it wasn't me, but it's mentally exhausting, because you know when you're getting all these extra minutes, this it's on you every single night. If you don't score, well, who's going to do it? The guy that plays for 4 or 6 minutes, no, he's not going to do it either. So it's taxing in a lot of different ways. The fatigue, the news and injuries, all these things that you'd like to avoid starts to creep up and show their ugly head. They weren't practicing a lot either, like a lot of days off, optional skates for these guys, which makes the rest of the practice for the rest of the team a little more, because now we're missing these two or three, four guys sometimes all the time, and it kind of pulls guys out of the practice, and it's just a different feel when you aren't out there, your full team, and are going through the motions together. So, like I said, a lot of things to like about it, but there was also things that in my opinion, could have done a little bit differently, and it also looked like he changed the going into Columbus, maybe also because he doesn't have the three horses he had here in Vancouver to go with it that way.
Well, there was the two big moments of that season, obviously, were the fight with Calgary and then what happened going into the Heritage Classic. I mean, can you think back on just how the reaction was after the whole Luongo debacle happened?
Yeah, again, touch on the Calgary first. We knew that was happening before the game started. We saw you get the lineup from Calgary. And there had been an incident, I want to say it was Kellen Lane and one of the Calgary players who was starting as well. Lane had beat him up in the minors, something like that.
McGrattan, maybe?
No. Lane did not beat up McGrattan.
Yeah, Brian McGrattan was, yeah.
Yeah. No, he had beat somebody up in the minors, and he was called up, and he was starting as well. And this was Kellen Lane's first game. So Torch saw the lineup, walked into the dressing room, and Barb hardly had done this to Torch years back. So there was awfully something brewing. So, again, we started our guys as well, and a couple of guys were told, hey, make sure that this guy doesn't fight that guy, and Tommy, make sure you got Brian McGrattan, these things, and that you don't want, I think, Westgaard was out there as well. So they had a very tough team. So we knew it was coming. But, again, I think Torts kind of went over the hill because it was Kellen Lane's first game, and he got to play 1 second, and then he got kicked out of it because of this. But again, from there to them storming into the other team's dressing room, what is that, 45 minutes later, like you'd have time to digest this and think about it. But like I sat on the bench and I heard Torch, I'm going to go get him. And Sullivan right next to him. I'll be right behind you, Torch. So it's like, they knew this was coming. So this wasn't a spur of the moment kind of thing. They were obviously upset about this and wanted to speak their mind. Again, the Heritage Classic, obviously that was handled wrong. Lou should have been playing that game, no question. It didn't matter if he'd lost the 10 before that. That was set up for him. The gear was purchased, this stuff. It the game didn't matter. Win or lose, it did not matter at that point. It was you got to do the right things for the right people here. And again, it was, I'm not, I think it was done the night before. So I'm like, it wasn't like he was given a, you might not be playing, or it's just like, boom, hey, you're not playing this. And like I said, this game was lined up in the summer beforehand. And hey, Lou, we got to get you gear for this game. Mm-hmm. What are you going to look like? What do you want to look like? Outdoor game, first time in your career, you're a Hall of Famer, all these things. Yeah. And then you're throwing that at him. It was handled wrong, no question about that. And like we were, again, mystified in the dressing room. Didn't think it was handled right in any way. And again, you saw it on Lou too, that was more than just you're not playing this game. It's like it did something deeper.
Well, I mean, and for Lou specifically, I mean, he went through the embarrassment of not getting traded at the deadline the year before and did the whole my contract sucks thing, comes back. Like, you know, and I know people don't feel sorry for people sometimes, but it seemed like there was too much embarrassment for him to take after that happened too. To some degree.
The contract thing was what it was.
So yeah.
There was no quite the whatever tipped the camel that whatever you say, that was that game. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Lou, after that, he said that's it now. Get me out of here. That's just too much. The fans had a lot of it to do as well.
Yeah.
He wasn't treated very nicely after 2011. Some of the things that went... not just him, the family as well. It went a little bit too far.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, when the on-ice happened as well. There's like, yeah, okay, get me out of here. And again, he did everything he could for us. I remember my first call up against Dallas and Anaheim. Like the only reason we're in some of these games is him. He was absolutely phenomenal and brought elite goaltending to Vancouver that had been dying for that for numerous years. And all of a sudden he's there and gets you to within a game of a cup. And again, he wasn't treated proper in my opinion.
No, I'm with you on that. I think a lot of fans felt the same way, despite a lot of fans obviously not being supporters, at least at one point. Like Dave on Twitter mentions, it was Blair Jones that Kellen Lane fought, and that's the guy that he fought that game as well in Calgary and fought in the minors. You mentioned Mike Sullivan. Did you see the success coming from Mike Sullivan after he left and ended up in Pittsburgh after working with him as an assistant?
No, I did not. He was in charge of the D's, so it wasn't that much I had that much dealings I had with him, really. So again, I dealt more with Gully, in the sense that we had the assistant coaches that had their areas. So he was running the D's a little bit more. Again, he obviously been around the game for a long time with Torts as well. Wasn't afraid to speak his mind or all these things, but I didn't see that he'd be the guy who could step into Pittsburgh and bring them a couple cups and do what he did. So again, I wouldn't say surprised, because a lot of these guys, all they need is an opportunity, and then you can turn it around. Like I said, it is a lot of, if you know how to manage a group and you get the right group, boom, you really have something.
Yannick Hansen, our guest here on Canuck Central. So Stanley Cup Final, Colorado takes Game 1. The speed was incredible, and yet as much as they took the run of play, Yannick, Tampa was right there and took it to overtime. It almost made me feel like, you know, if I'm Colorado, as much as, yes, getting the win is huge, we're 3 wins away from the Stanley Cup, we know Tampa Bay is going to be better going forward in this series, so we're going to have to even be better than we were in Game 1.
Yeah, there's no question in there, but Vasilevskiy is going to be the key to this.
Yeah,
Colorado's going to put up their 40-some-odd shots, grade-A chances here and there. MacKinnon's going to do his things. If Vasilevskiy will shut it down, they can win, because I do think that the goaltending is heavily favored in Tampa. And if they can get some of these timely goals that probably shouldn't go in, that'll give them the belief that he can win it for them, because I do think he needs to do that. Yeah, we saw Kucherov, what he can do and these things, but Colorado will still get a ton of opportunities. They're too good of a team. They're too deep of a team. They have too many strings to pull on in order to get the scoring, that unless your goalie is phenomenal, sorry to say, but I don't think you stand a chance.
Well, and you know, that's the thing. It's absolutely incredible. But one of the things that I was really surprised, well, I wouldn't say surprised by, but one thing that got me was the amount of mistakes that Tampa made early. And I know, you know, if Colorado forces them, but some of them were unforced, especially when I watch a guy like Victor Hedman. How much of that stuff do you expect the Tampa Bay Lightning to clean up and do better in, especially in Game 2?
Yeah, I think it was Stamkos who said in one of his interviews before the finals here started that this is the best team they've played in the last 3 years here. And there's no question that they play with so much speed that your time with the puck, even though we say in the NHL there's no time with the puck, it's even less now. Plus, you're going into Colorado, which anybody who's played in Colorado know it's hell, especially the first game, because your lungs are burning. You get caught in 20, 25-second shifts, that's too long. Your next 3 shifts are ruined. It takes a little bit of time to get acclimatized. I remember my first couple of years being told stories, or yeah, the older guys, remember when we came in here and we had to play against Forsberg and Sakic and all these guys, and it was impossible to play. I was maybe fortunate enough that when I started playing the Colorado team, they weren't very good.
Yeah.
So yeah, you get caught once in a while, but we were always winning. But now you're seeing some of that come back, where not only are you got the, what do you say, the elements against you, you're playing in altitude, but the team is also better and faster than you. So it's just adding on top of this. So it's a very, very difficult place to play when you don't have the upper hand.
One last thing, at least for me, Valeri Nichushkin has gotten a ton of love here during these playoffs, had the big assist in overtime. And, you know, his two-way game has really been what's been applauded the most, Yannick. And a lot of people over the last couple of days are saying, you know, that's kind of exactly the type of winger the Canucks need to add. Do you see that as a need for Vancouver, just a really strong two-way forward like Val Nichushkin has become?
Well, that is one of the players you're hopefully looking for. Again, specific is very, very hard, but it's nice to get some size on the wings. You have a lot of smaller skilled forwards, mix and matching a little bit more. Again, I'm very cautious in picking players off very, very good teams and say, okay, is he going to be able to duplicate this on so-and-so team? Because all of a sudden you get picked from a very good team where you played in a sheltered position against weaker opposition. Now you get put on a weaker teams, moved up the lineup, you're playing against better oppositions, and you're not going to be able to duplicate what you were doing. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. Like, he wasn't very good in Dallas. He's been very, very good here for Colorado. But we are also seeing some of the same things with these guys that come from certain teams. They go to Tampa, for instance, and all of a sudden in Tampa, they're putting up these phenomenal numbers because you're getting put in a position to succeed. The pecking order is right because the teams are deep enough that you play against opposition that you're maybe a little bit stronger and a little bit better, a little bit faster, and then your numbers will improve. But that is where the salary cap keeps pulling these teams apart. You can't do this because, well, you start putting up the numbers, you get paid, and then you got to play in a position that you might not be or should not be playing in.
Yannick, we appreciate the time as always. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Enjoy the sun.
Yes, there is Yannick Hansen enjoying the end of, well, hopefully the end of January.
Yes, hopefully. But honestly, I don't mind. It hasn't been too bad. It hasn't been too bad.
You're the only one saying that.
It's not that bad. It's not like it's raining all day, every day. I'm not cold every day. Yeah. It's like, you know, like today was lovely until I came to work.
It's funny. My TikTok algorithm is giving me all of the like
negatives.
Negative Vancouver jokes.
Yeah. I mean, but honestly, like, the last week, it's not like we've had days on end raining. It was one day, I think it was on the weekend that rained. The rest has been pretty good.
Yeah.
There's some rain during the day here and there.
It's not very warm.
Clean. It's fine. It's like 19 degrees. You have a hoodie. It's fine. You're right. It's not so bad.
It's not too terrible.
Honestly, I think it's too much whining going on. It's not that bad. Like, the forests aren't burning. We're not inhaling smoke.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, oppressive heat.
Quit your whining.
Honestly, my message is quit your whining. It's not that bad. It could be worse.
Okay.
I saw like snow in Mexico City like last week or something. Trust me, it ain't that bad.
We'll see though. You know, the weather app says we're getting a lot of rain over the next 7 days. So. Not looking forward to it. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah coming up. Canucks, former Canucks AGM Chris Gear will join us. His take on how off-season planning gets going in a front office. That's next on Canucks Central.